One such man tried to seize power in 632 BC, named Cailan. He failed. The aristocrats wrote the laws down to satisfy public dissatisfaction with aristocratic rule. They called in a man called Draco, who wrote the laws. And when he finished writing the laws, it was quite clear they favored the aristocrats. We use the term draconian, meaning a very, very harsh law code. And Draco was asked with the criminal code, why are all infractions punished by death? Draco's comment was apparently, well, everything deserves the death penalty. And when I get to the serious crimes, what else can I do? It's an apocryphal story, but it brings home that by 600 BC, unlike most Greek city-states that had developed new types of institutions in overseas colonies, Athens was in many ways a very conservative agrarian society dominated by a charmed group of families and a large citizen class desperately falling into debt slavery and into destitution. And the situation was ripe for a civil war, a class war. The Greek word for that is stasis, and a tyrant, a strong man who would come in and destroy the constitution and make himself dictator, as we would call him. Well, it didn't happen. In 594 or 593 BC, the Athenians called in a moderator, an aristocrat of moderate rank called Solon, and he wrote the first constitution and was remembered as a lawgiver. He reorganized the Athenian constitution just enough to prevent a crisis from breaking out. He carried out certain economic reforms. He canceled debt slavery, he canceled mortgages, but no property redistribution or social revolution. He was too conservative for that. He tried to encourage the Athenians to develop commercial crops in the long term and get out of the business of exporting grain and fellow citizens as slaves to the economic centers of the Peloponnesus. Those reforms, however, would take generations before they would take effect. He also reorganized the constitution along two important lines. One is that holding of high rank was now based on wealth, not on birth. Athens was reorganized into four property classes. These remained in throughout the entire Athenian democracy, and one's position in society was based on the property class, and they were strictly economic classes. The top one was essentially in Greek nothing more than the 500 bushelmen, the pentakosmiodemnoi, the hippias or knights, the zugatai or the hoplite class, the thetes, the lowest class. All of these were based on their income and their production, and the top two classes could hold public office. The middle class could sit in the council and vote. The lowest class could vote in the assembly and sit on popular juries. Furthermore, he created a new council, the Council of the 400, from the top three property classes that would now act as the committee for the assembly. And he instituted courts of appeal in which 6,000 jurors, the vast majority from the lower classes, could hear an appeal in the court of the magistrates. So what he did is he removed the most offensive economic grievances, gave the lower classes legal protection in the lower courts, satisfied the hoplite class by giving them control of the boule, that is the council, and forced the wealthy classes to play together as aristocrats based on wealth rather than birth. It was a remarkable constitution. It prevented war among the classes. Ultimately, it failed in its main aim, which was to prevent tyranny. Solon himself had to check out of Athens because everyone was outraged. It was a true compromise, the meaning of which was no one was satisfied. A generation later, Athens fell under a tyrant, a man named Pisistratus. Pisistratus, however, remained a remarkable tyrant. From 546 until his death in 526, for nearly 20 years, he implemented the Solonian reforms. And by his need to call the assembly and the council to legitimize his laws, he taught the Athenians how to govern themselves. And what happened is, under the tyranny of Pisistratus, the Athenians learned to administer the laws, to meet regularly in assembly, to work out procedures, and in so doing, learned to govern themselves, because shortly after the tyrant's death, his two sons took power. They were overthrown by a combination of political dissidents in Athens and Sparta, and what the Athenian assembly found is it could run itself without the need of a tyrant. That is, a strong man who indirectly manipulated and controlled the assembly and the elected offices. The assembly could do it itself. And the Athenians remember Pisistratus as a constitutional and good tyrant in that sense. He gave them the means to learn how to govern themselves, even though he rigged the constitution for his own benefit. He also built upon the economic reforms that turned Athens increasingly into a commercial state based on seaborne commerce, imported grains, and the export of silver of commercial crops such as olive oil, wine, the development of the marble trade, and above all, the increasing number of skilled people attracted to Athens to develop ceramics, textile industries, shipbuilding, so that by 500 BC, one of Athens' greatest assets was its skilled labor. And as I said, Athens had a large population, and the Athenians were extremely generous in the 6th century BC and bringing in other Greeks with these specialties and sometimes awarding them with citizenship if they would develop Athenian industry and manufacturing.